as a whole. And so we've got a wave and we're going to ride it until we get our goals accomplished and end this mass government surveillance of people in the United States.
Chad Marlowe, senior policy counsel at the ACLU, where he focuses on privacy, surveillance and technology issues. He leads the ACLU's efforts against Flock. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
As Americans, there's one thing we can all agree on: the promise of our Constitution and the hope that liberty and justice is for all people. But here's the truth. Attacks on our constitutional rights, yours and mine, are greater than they've ever been. The right for all to vote, reproductive rights, the rights of immigrant families, the right to equal justice for Black, Brown, and LGBTQ plus folks.
We protect everyone's rights. The freedom of religion, the freedom of expression, racial justice, LGBTQ rights, the rights of the disabled. We are here for everyone.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought on behalf of millions of Americans, protecting our vote and our voice. I believe in the ACLU because they're for real. To learn more about how the ACLU is fighting for your rights and mine, go to myaclu.org today.
Okay, okay. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's Tuesday evening, and it's 6 o'clock p.m., which means another edition of Off the Wall is next. A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein with you on this Tuesday evening. It's Tuesday, right, Kyle? Just going to nod?
Yeah. How are you?
flustered, as always, trying to get everything together and failing to do so. Okay. You ever feel like you have something in your hand and then you don't have it anymore?
Yes, whenever I'm handling cash.
Yeah, that happens too. So how was your week?
Really, really intense. I've been busy with various things that are kind of cool, kind of unusual, some kind of new things. I'm really feeling good about my own experience. I was like kind of trying to stop myself in the midst of all that busyness and just realizing like, wow, I've, you know, when you have connections, when you've talked and done things before, you know, it's super helpful because you have something to refer to. And so I'm thankful for, you know, what I've learned over the years about how to manage things and, you know, hang on to important paperwork so that I can refer to it when I want to refer to it. And that's really paid off in some respects. But yeah, I don't know, kind of withdraw from the big world football event.
Yeah, that's over now.
It is. So there's a little bit of, well, like hangover, little withdrawal,
a little shock.
Yeah. But it's okay. That was, you know, a whole thing and it really occupied us for a long time. And it's weird because there's a lot of things that I hadn't made progress on. And I feel like while watching that, I was too anxious to sort of be patient and enjoy it. But I also was very productive while it was going on. So it's sort of this odd thing of, I felt like I was taking my attention away from things I needed to be working on, but I was actually doing quite a bit. You were doing quite a bit, and you always do when like FA or UEFA or...
Not the FA. FA starts over the fall. I don't really pay attention to it, but definitely UEFA. Definitely.
But you find it soothing. Like it's good, yes. Background.
I do a lot of work and I have games on in the background, and it's kind of like this, you know, you're supposed to be in a certain place at a certain time of the year. And if the World Cup is happening or if Euro is happening, then I should be doing a particular task, and I'm doing that particular task. And I hopefully finish that task by the time the competition is finished. And yes, it worked this year as well.
Yeah. So that was kind of going on alongside it. And then just like sort of checking in with people. But I have family and people that are like big fans and, you know, exchanging a little bit. But I'm honestly like, I'm so, really preoccupied with what is a really unusual time of year for us, where we're doing kind of a whole lot of different things that aren't ordinarily stuff we're doing, namely event planning. That stuff, like, it just is all consuming, and yeah. So I haven't been really aware of much else while I'm sort of busy and trying to, you know, anticipate what has to be done.
Yeah, it's we're planning a hacker conference. We do this every year about this time. Used to be every 2 years. Now it's every year. we're trying not to lose our minds. But it's something that takes every moment of your time virtually. You wake up and you dive into some crisis. And by the time you fall asleep, you're putting another fire out. And it's just, it can be fun. It can be extremely frustrating. It can be invigorating. It can be draining. It's something. I'll say that. I'll be happy when we get to rest a little bit. That would be nice.
Yeah, it's really hard to talk about while you're in it. You got to just kind of put your nose down. There's a lot of stuff around, you know, like you're talking about. That we're both, like, I've just been saying to kind of put it lightly, like, you know, this year's been horrific and the operating conditions are less than ideal. And that's yes. the most pleasant way I can put it is that
somehow that scares me more than,
oh, it should, yeah. It should terrify you. I to even stop and reflect is itself, a perilous thing because you could kind of start to, spiral.
Yes.
But what's, And doing this thing is and so always...
Other people can too, and we have to watch out for that.
Yeah, it's
so
really,
many people are working their asses off.
Yeah, a lot, and they're looking to people, you know, that are, you know, at least straining to see a direction to go in. I'm really heartened when people are activating and self-directed and shining, you know, doing what they do best and just really stepping up, but... a lot of stuff that, as I said, I'm drawing from experience now, a lot of stuff we do, it doesn't get done unless somebody actually does something.
Right, right.
Which is the nature of most inertia.
And if you do it, though, then you've done it. Then you know how to do it. And then you can do it again.
Yeah, like you said, like, you're kind of like, oh, how are we doing this? Well, in advance of this, I didn't want to. A lot of us didn't want to. It was like that, it's again, inertia. It's like, well, yeah, that could be something we do, but that would mean we have to do something. So it took a long time because it was, you know, it's a very, and I think this goes for everybody who gets involved in things like community radio stations or any kind of thing that's kind of bigger than you individually. It's a long, long walk, a long journey. And at the beginning of that walk, you want to gather people around your cause. You want to bring people with you to make that long journey together. And it's just, it can be lonely at the outset when you're trying to put one foot and get provisions and get, you know, to a point where people actually are compelled to want to join you on that and bring some more supplies and bring some more, you know, energy to it. And I just think about us conjuring up what it took to say, like, okay, well, the alternative is even more horrific for us, for the causes we're interested in, for the people that wouldn't otherwise have an opportunity to learn something or share something. Like,
we should point out incredible. The importance of this is more than just playing with computers. It's about freedom of speech. It's about freedom to access technology. It's about the things that technology can be used for and against, how it can invade your privacy, how it can destroy your lives, and how it can also save your lives. Right now, we're living in a country where we are being abused by technology in so many ways. We're being spied on. We have all kinds of Orwellian programs in effect. And who better to disarm these programs or at least explain these programs than the people that work with the technology all the time, the people that are shaping the technology, the people that are breaking the technology, the people who have this innate curiosity. Oftentimes they're very young. Oftentimes they're kind of sneaky, and they're willing to tell their story. And that is why it's interesting. That's why I've been involved in the hacker world for so long, because there are so many good stories, so much to learn, so much power that can be abused if left unguarded. That's the inspiration.
Yeah, I can't say enough about it. And in general, that thing of having now started to see the result, it's actually taking form. You've got all these people coming along with you in record time. It's like this amazing vote of support. When we look historically, this is really profound. And what I'm thinking of too, when you're saying that, is we're setting the conditions. And this is what I think of when I'm, you know, putting forth the energy and doing what I can to coordinate, that we're setting the conditions for people that have something to say. And at this juncture, there's a lot to be said. A lot of people, all the things that frustrate people that might have a tie into the subject matter, like, someone's got something to say about it with some perspective, with some experience. And I've got a lot of things to say. There's a lot of people that really want to say some stuff and put it down on record, like really take some of this stuff to task and inform other people and empower them and give it a sense of let's say shade, some shade, or some let's say some framing, some humor, some ridicule. There's stuff that needs to be that's just begging to be heard, and I think that's that thing of it being bigger. That yeah, it is a hard thing, but you can when you start that and you get one foot in front of the other, you get people enrolled and involved. It becomes easier, and you realize that it was always this important, and it may not have seemed like something someone was interested in when we couldn't really conjure it or couldn't see the result early on. I think you are credited too for just you know, realizing the stakes. The stakes are you know, for everyone at this point, they're dire. There are people who are at real risk with all this automation, like you said, being used with federal agents and all of this kinds of stuff, couched and framed in these terms that are really hideous, dehumanizing terms around immigration, and something that was otherwise normal. Or if you want to talk about, you know, just being able to take care of ourselves with food or medical care and or good information, data that isn't corrupted. I mean, it's just so important the deeper you get into this journey. And I'm just really trying to be the best steward of it and not lose my head, because it's tough stuff. And I really appreciate your kind of coaching and reminders on this, because it's no joke. It's as we like things to be fun, and you know, I and as I said, we like to put it delicately, but it is we're not playing around here.
I didn't mention that part of the hacker world. Yes, we like to have fun. We always like to keep somewhat of an optimistic air and be adventurous at the same time. And yeah, you know, we've been at this since 1984 with the magazine, 1994 with the conferences. You know, talking about Orwell and you know, oppression of various sorts, only to see it happen right in front of us, only to see it develop. I mean, it was inevitable. Every science fiction story kind of tells the story about how AI is going to take over, how computers are going to run your lives, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we come into this fairly well armed, knowing what's ahead, and ready to do something about it. Problem is, most people don't care at all, and are perfectly okay allowing all of this to run right over them. That makes it a bit more of a challenge. So we have a lot to talk about, a lot to plan, a lot to build. If you want to see what we're up to, hope.net is our website. And that's where we're trying to put this whole thing together year after year. It's fun. It's frustrating. It's invigorating. It's unique. It absolutely is. Hackers on Planet Earth is what HOPE stands for, by the way. Wow. Anyway, I didn't plan on all that. I want to get back to the World Cup, because that was so much fun. I really, really enjoyed what it brought to us, which, you know, it was Trump's nightmare. Diversity. So much diversity. People from all over the world just emerging onto our shores and showing their magic and their uniqueness, being appreciated. Because, you know, individually, we love other people. We love people from other places. We love other cultures. You know, it's not our nature to be suspicious of them or to think the worst of them. That is what we are fed constantly by Fox News and by the Republicans and all the people that want us to hate and act without thinking and basically convince us that somehow we're at a disadvantage. What the World Cup showed us was how beautiful that can be, whether it's the people from Senegal or Haiti or the Democratic Republic of the Congo or Norway or Argentina, everywhere. It was the most amazing competition. And I'm just happy it happened. I'm happy it happened here in this country. You know, I'm going to be angry for a while about the inaccessibility of access to people, you know, common people that would have loved to have been in the stadiums to see some of these games. Instead, you know, they mostly went to corporations and celebrities and people like that. Maybe some very lucky people were able to pay a couple of $1,000s to get a lousy seat somewhere. But, you know, being able to see it on TV is fine. It still was a unique event. You could go to viewing parties in various places. see the magic of the particular culture of the teams that were playing at that point. Of course, you know, just because it's something that we appreciate as individuals does not mean that the rich and powerful don't get involved and don't try to ruin the whole thing. FIFA itself, a hugely corrupt organization that controls the World Cup, imposes all kinds of draconian rules and basically puts the fear of the Lord into individuals, makes a ton of money off of it. It's, you know, you have to kind of ignore that because it's the game itself is just so amazing. I saw some of the best games ever this competition. And it was something that you don't see very often. Not like that. Not like that. But it was embarrassing to see what happened in this country by the people running our... Well, I'm going to just say the person. You know, what Trump did twice, okay? The first time to stick his nose into a penalty and basically get it overturned for the next game, unlike any other team, giving the United States a huge advantage in the game against Belgium, which fortunately they lost, because had they not lost that, it would have tainted the game, it would have tainted the United States' reputation as a team, it just would have left a very sour taste everywhere. But losing, and losing badly, kind of was... what had to happen. And it's sad because the U.S. team didn't deserve that. They didn't do anything wrong. It was Trump basically being a bully yet again and having his lapdog Infantino doing whatever he said. And then closing after the game was over, I assume everyone's seen the game by now or knows the results. Well, I'm going to tell you. So the rest of the show, tune away if you don't know. But basically, Spain defeated Argentina, and there were these closing ceremonies, as there are in the World Cup. And, you know, Trump had to be in the stadium. I guess there was no avoiding that. But he would not get off the damn stage. You know, this is a very special time for the players. They've won the World Cup. They're celebrating. And here's this big fat ass standing in front of them that won't move. That obviously is not part of the team and is just trying to get more publicity for himself. I don't even know. But it was very awkward. And, you know, Infantino himself had to sprint across the stage and try and pull Trump off. And he wouldn't move. It took forever for him to move. It was really sad and ridiculous. A little funny, but oh my God.
Yeah, Trump was trying to wave him away, but... It was so predictable if you kind of know his personality. I think everybody watching realized he's not going to leave. He's going to stay there and essentially photobomb this momentous moment and real affront to him, because Spain has been so against a lot of Donald Trump and the U.S. policy changes. I mean, they've really resisted his reach and his influence and coercive nature. So for them to win and then be sort of on center stage, he just couldn't help himself. I think anybody who knows and is familiar could have predicted, wow, this is impossible. And that Infantino didn't actually already... have a shock collar on him or something and had to catch up was pretty amazing, because he has no sense. He's the main character in his story. So, of course, he had to be in the picture.
It was just, I mean, you know.
To say nothing of the other world leader, co-hosting leaders, Mexico.
People don't know this. There were two other presidents on stage when everybody was getting, it was kind of funny to watch. Every player had to go by Infantino. And Trump and the Mexican president and the Canadian premier. Only Infantino and Trump were giving, awards or?
Yeah, their medals, silver, bronze, and gold medals.
To put around your neck. And Fantina would do one, and Trump would do the next one. It was surprisingly coordinated. They went back and forth, and they didn't really mess any of them up.
Well, not only that, presenting the trophy alone, it was both Infantino and Trump holding it like they both had to carry it.
It
was like Trump was not letting go of it and just had to be the last one touching it.
I'm sure that was part of a negotiation. That was part of a negotiation.
And Infantino was just trying to make sure that he didn't swap it out for one made out of like pewter or something.
But the thing is, when they were giving out those little badges, I was watching the reaction of the players, and I'd say 95% of them were just, let's get this over with, and they just, you know, they might, you know, embrace somebody there. Even Infantino, a couple of them embraced. Nobody embraced Trump. They maybe at best gave him a handshake. One guy slapped him on the side. I think that was a dare. And pretty much everyone else just tried to get out as quickly as they possibly could, which, you know, you can completely understand. You had all of that playing out. You had the two other presidents who were being ignored. And then, you know, the whole walking across the stage thing. Here's what gets me. And you saw me going through this. First of all, you in the middle of the game, you would see a shot of Trump and Infantino in their box seats. And we all knew the crowd was booing, but you didn't hear the crowd booing on TV. Now, we watched different feeds. There was the American feed and the Canadian feed. Thank God for the Canadian feed, because I got to tell you, that American feed is just so annoying. They just won't shut up. They just keep spewing out statistics that you don't care about. They just keep coming. Whereas, you know, the Canadian feed has a couple of British guys, and they're enjoying the game, and they're telling you what you need to know, and they're, you know, going back and forth, and it's enjoyable to listen to. You don't want to throw something at your TV set. But in both cases, you know, we looked at the recordings of both, and you did not hear booing, not significantly, when they showed Trump. However, every recording from a fan angle, it was loud. It was incredibly loud. So you had that little bit of censorship right there, that bit of controlling what it was you heard. Nobody wants to hear the president being booed, do they? And then afterwards, that whole stage fiasco that we just described, I was looking all over the place for any news report that mentioned it. I didn't find any. On Sunday night, everywhere. I looked on every network. And yeah, everyone was talking about the World Cup, Spain defeated Argentina, et cetera, et cetera. Trump was there. But nobody said, boy, it was an incredibly awkward scene. This guy just wouldn't leave the state. What was going on there? I did see a lot of reports about how Trump was cheered and about how Trump was at the game and how he was representing America and all these like nice patriotic things. Most of them on Fox channels because, you know, Fox was carrying the World Cup. And I realized, wow, the transition is complete. We have a media that is just the lapdog of the government. They will do whatever they want. You know, there's nobody out there to just say, no, this is what really happened. Now, if you go to YouTube, you see all these people that are pretending to be correspondents. You know what I'm talking about. You go to a YouTube channel, and there's some guy there in his bathroom who's giving commentary on world events. He thinks he's Walter Cronkite. And, you know, of course, he's got to be on camera the entire time. I kind of prefer Fox News. You know, there's something about that just makes me wince so badly. Look, there are people who have gone to journalism school, people who know what they're talking about. They've studied the history. They've talked to all kinds of people. They've done the work. They just can't get a job because, you know, media is in shambles right now. But those are the people we should be listening to, not just any, you know, Tom, Dick, or Harry that can string a sentence together. Yet on YouTube, that is what you get, and that's all you got on Sunday night. Yeah, a lot of people saying, oh boy, Trump, what an idiot. But, you know, no matter what, Trump could, you know, do the best thing in the world, and they would still say the same thing. Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's true. There are people who are basically, they have one campaign, and they will never let up. Well, a couple of days later, the late night talk show host finally were on the air Monday night, and that's when you started seeing commentary about this. It wasn't before then. It really wasn't before then. MS Now, okay, they did a little bit. They started to rev it up. They're doing it, I think, nonstop now. But why couldn't you do it at the beginning? Why couldn't you cover news as it was happening? It was so disappointing. And I realized just how weak the media is. Not the most important thing in the world, but a very telling adventure that happened, you know, over our airwaves. The whole world saw that. The whole world.
No one needs a meek journalistic industry. Like, it just being kind of scared and fearful and timid and under-resourced and relegated and just in only in service of sort of these narratives that they're fed or otherwise convince themselves that it's market tested. Like, that is not okay. It's not sufficient, but that's the kind of thing that's happened to a lot of these firms. They're getting hollowed out. And a lot of the independent sources, community, public media, and otherwise are stretched themselves for other reasons. Matters of consolidation, matters of consumption habits, you name it. And it's the very reason why I think we're listening across generations. I think that's something they encourage here at community radio, at a college station. We want to know what there is at the kind of forefront of what kinds of things young people and people that are new to technology or using technology to get things out in new ways. Like, yeah, we all want to share in that. And evolve and grow and use it better so that we can all be informed and be better served by the forms and modes of media that we have. So we really should be demanding that kind of that expectation of critical analysis instead of sort of a feedback loop in service of access to these elites.
Yeah, no, I hear that. It's easy to point the finger and say that this is the problem, because it is the problem. What is happening with media consolidation? And if this Paramount Plus deal goes through, it's really going to be the end of so many things. And yet, in their Orwellian way, they're able to say it strengthens competition. Yeah, basically swallowing up the competition somehow strengthens the competition. But I also have to lay some blame on us, individual people, because we're hypocrites. We complain about this a lot, but then when something comes along, we don't support it. We don't keep it going. You know, I think of, I'm going to give an example. Vice News. Remember Vice News? That was an amazing, amazing news program. It was on every night. It used to be on five nights a week. It was on HBO, and then it was on Vice TV. It was basically alternative news, uncensored news. News that covered controversial topics. In fact, the whole Charlottesville thing was covered on Vice News. I don't think anyone would have known about Charlottesville were it not for Vice News. In fact, I would say because of Charlottesville, Trump lost. Mostly because of Charlottesville. So you could say Vice News might have actually gotten us Biden. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Well, it's definitely not a bad thing when you realize what the alternative was. But we got the alternative in the end anyway, so I don't know where we'd be right now. But the point is, we had something really good. And I got to say, other than you, Kyle, I can't think of a single person who watched the program. You know, we're all supposedly interested in these things. We're all supposedly critics and media experts and people who love freedom. But when it comes to something that actually is good for us, what do? We complain. We call them hypocrites. We say, well, you're not allowing the union to prosper. This person makes so much money as their chief executive. Okay, you know, you can find that about virtually anything. But don't you want to support the idea at least so that we have something to build on? Instead, the whole thing just, I mean, you know, a lot of fault to them as well because they didn't make the best business policies, business decisions. But it just seems like this was something truly unique and amazing, and nobody seemed to really care. And I could point at other things too, you know. We have democracy now here on WUSB and many stations, and people do really seem to enjoy that and support that. But that's one program. That's 1 hour, you know, five days a week. There should be entire networks. Look at all the conservative radio that's out there. That's thriving. Where is the radio to the left, other than below 92 and constantly asking for money. You know, yeah, we don't have commercials. That's great. That's amazing. We shouldn't have commercials. But we also should be basically doing so well that we have to debate what we're going to spend all the money on, because, you know, we want to keep making better programs and have better technology, better equipment. So, yeah, you know, I think there's just so much more we all can do, and we don't do it because we're lazy. You know, and basically people are lazy. I'm lazy too. But, you know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to see lost opportunities, you know, to see what happened to PBS. And, of course, that's not our fault. That's what the federal government did. But I've also seen so many stations just completely fall apart because they just don't have the support. And I hope WUSB is never one of those stations. And if you want to make sure of that, I'm just going to say right now, support us. WUSB.fm, you'll find all the info there.
I really think, yeah, the Vice News thing, it was just like a flash in the pan. It's like the OK Cola of television news. But
what's OK Cola?
It was like a brand that happened briefly for like a narrow segment of
I missed it.
Gen X population. Wow. In the 90s. I think Coke released it, but it was just like...
Wait, Coke released another Cola?
Yeah, it was just like an ad campaign, basically, for a weird flavor and brand.
Wow. Okay.
It's an obscure reference, I guess, for millennials. But basically, like, they're not gone forever. You know, it could come back, but it should have spawned like 10 other outlets.
Yes.
Similar. I mean, similar to their model. Right now, they're just idling, playing reruns and like paying for the cable, you know, for the channel with old programming and, you know, new ads. And they just run it like
it's garbage. It's utter garbage.
It's all trash.
But, you know, every TV network, I've noticed this on cable, every TV network turns into the same network.
Well, it's great.
They start off as a niche, and then they just turn into basically reruns of CSI or something. It's always
honestly
the same thing.
Yeah, it's just all automated, probably just running without any intervention.
Oh, yeah, just computers.
Without
That's all
any
they are.
Intervention. There's probably no office, no overhead, and zero employees. It's just like maybe a couple hard drives and, you know, some people scheduling things.
In you know, a kiosk somewhere. It's not even their own building. Oh my God, it's depressing.
That's probably all virtualized. They probably have like a virtual control room. It's and yeah, who knows? But they're not gone forever. And if they gave a damn about their news division, they could rehire, let's say, new talented journalists. Maybe have a little bit better HR policies, you know, and manage it for the long term. But it isn't a priority because I don't think they really like that. Wasn't like the people of the news arm were, but the business people, I don't think their heart was necessarily in it or found the operating environment, again, horrific for the business model and for the consumption methods too. They're competing with that same consolidated, fragmented media environment. If you can't make it work, you can't make it work, even with sponsors.
But think of the hostility as well from the federal government about, you know, calling the press the enemy of the people, getting the public, you know, riled up against the press. How do you work in that situation along with all the economic issues? You know, it becomes very unsavory to become a journalist.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's like one of the most dangerous jobs as far as, you know, risks. I mean, it's up there with some of those, you know, so-called alpha careers.
Well, it used to be dangerous.
Pretty damn dangerous.
To go into war zones, but now it's dangerous to stay at home.
Yeah.
Because of all the hatred that is being spread about journalism.
Yeah, absolutely. It's derided. It's been trashed. It's been derided. And if you came up in the industry and especially at a time when like newspapers and a lot of this stuff was changing, whoo boy, you have a little bit of an attitude about this. Because, I mean, for me, like, I felt that it was important. I mean, part of being that and having standards and not just being like, you know, the main character on your YouTube channel where you pretend you're a journalist, you are usually someone who has a reputation and your integrity is part of why people trust you.
Exactly.
And it's inherent in your work. And on top of that, if you're a writer, if you're independent, even if you're unaffiliated and just a consultant or part-time correspondent or something, you are likely bound by a code of ethics through professional organizations. Mm-hmm. And people forget that. Like, I'm involved with several, and, you know, there's aspects of the things I do in those realms that I'm, you know, I'm in agreement, in alignment with that, because I care about the profession and being a practitioner of media, and I know, you know, where you can start compromising your own ethics. And mm-hmm. I think that's not something that you need to run a monetized YouTube channel. And yet the algorithm makes you what, more believable? I mean, it's really nonsensical. But, we need entities who are vetting and, you know, building a bench of proper journalists that are resource. And that's the thing with Vice. Like, it was more operating conditions. Their whole joke was they were the cross section between overhyped and overfunded.
Well, that didn't work out too well.
No. So it was a lot of other things. Anyway, there's plenty of other new platforms. Hopefully they're, you know, creative enough to, yeah, maybe run without overhead, but also do really good stuff and stay active. Like, maybe there's something in this, there's a sweet spot there. We don't know, but if you like stuff, support it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to have a tough time. You might not see it.
You know, we have a journalism school here at Stony Brook now. I didn't have that when I was going to school here, but I would have loved it. I can't wait to see what some of the fresh faces are going to come up with journalism-wise. You know, that's how you learn. That's how you become somebody who knows what they're talking about and can actually speak with authority. And, you know, these days, people who speak with knowledge are seen as the threat. And I can see that from, you know, Trump's point of view, because, yeah, they are the threat. They're going to tell you how you're wrong and basically find your lies. But for people who are just coming up, that should be the goal, is to be able to do your research, you know, actual, not just your own research that you want the conclusion before you do the actual work, but, you know, investigating, learning, sharing. That's what it's all about. That's what journalism is. And boy, I hope we're able to save it, because boy, it is under threat like nothing else.
Yeah, it's a really bad time for that fearfulness and for these outlets to be disappearing. So definitely support them, support community media of all types.
So what else? What else has been going on this this past week? We only have 20 minutes left.
I'm just catching my breath. I could talk about so many different things, but I haven't really been paying attention.
Stony Brook Film Festival's happening. I haven't been there yet, and I'd like to go to that.
Yes.
But, you know, have you seen The Odyssey, the movie that just came out?
No, but I've heard a lot about it.
Oh, my God. Have you heard about it?
I have heard about it.
Those poor people. I mean, wow. I just being stuck traveling all that time. 10 years. 10-year voyage from Troy to Ithaca. I mean, that is something. Do you remember when we were stuck up there Albany Rensselaer with the Amtrak nightmare? I can see how it could happen. I really can understand that. There's no Amtrak station in either Troy or Ithaca. There should be. Right now, what you have to do is you have to take. I guess you get an Uber. And you go down to Albany Rensselaer train station. But then, you know, you wind up having to go to Syracuse, and it's about 60 miles to get to Ithaca from there. So it's a real major pain in the ass. You're best off doing a bus. I mean, that's not even the most convenient thing. You probably have to transfer. 10 years, man. That's rough. That's hard. I can see it happening, though. The way people treat you up there, it's not cool. It's not right. I haven't seen the film yet. Looking forward to it. Like to learn a lot about this. I'm hoping we can use this to get better train service. So all that said, Nick LaLota, one of my favorite people, Representative Nick LaLota. he's threatening his constituents now. You want to hear the latest threat, Kyle?
No.
Well, then I can't read it if you don't want to hear it.
That's not my problem.
Well, you said no.
Well, try. Why don't you try?
I got to find the right. I'm not going to read the whole thing.
I'm being honest.
All right.
It's called authenticity. Uh-huh. It's very in right now.
Okay. He is obsessed with illegal immigrants, in his words, or undocumented human beings, as they might be called by civilized people. He basically is going nuts about East Hampton now, because he just found out that they have a policy that he's not familiar with. And He's basically coming up with all these crazy scenarios. If either municipality had an illegal immigrant in custody following an arrest for crime such as possessing child sexual abuse material, third-degree assault, and second-degree robbery while aided by another person, it's very specific. Local officials could not use local personnel or vehicles to transport that individual into federal custody. Coupled with New York's cashless bail laws, these sanctuary policies require that those violent criminal illegal aliens be expeditiously released from custody. That exacerbates our nation's illegal immigration crisis and makes our communities far less safe. Okay, none of this makes our communities far less safe. What makes our communities far less safe are the people that you give permission to going around killing people. Yeah, the people who aren't trained. The people who basically shoot first, ask questions later, don't wear body cams ever. That's the problem, a lot more than anything else. And what is said here is patently untrue as well. We'll get to that. But basically, here's the threat. That's why I have informed East Hampton Town and East Hampton Village that I will not support future community project funding requests from their municipalities unless they reverse these misguided policies. So in other words, until you do things my way, I'm not going to do my job for you at all. Yeah, I'm not going to have any funds go your way. It's basically blackmail. It's basically bullying tactics. This is what Nick Lallota does. And yet somehow they say he's in a safe environment to get reelected. I mean, this is what I mean. Long Island, you have the chance to do something here. You have the chance to wake up and let justice speak and not be bullied around by this guy. This is wrong. I mean, no matter what you think about immigration, threatening your own constituents, how is that right? How does that happen? So I did, a little bit of looking into this. I'm not saying I did a whole lot, just a little bit. But basically, looking into whether or not the sanctuary policies in East Hampton are that different from other parts of the country. Basically, the conclusion is that their actual legal framework aligns closely with standard limits on local police power. Town police are barred from entering into formal 287G agreements with the federal government. These agreements allow local police officers to be deputized as civil federal immigration agents. And they say, no, we don't want to do that. And many, many other places do the same thing. East Hampton police officers do not stop, question, or arrest individuals solely over their immigration status or civil immigration warrants. However, local police fully cooperate with federal law enforcement in criminal investigations or when presented with a judicial warrant signed by a judge. Not these crackerjack things that they're waving around in the air that they sign themselves. Yeah, real ones. The community trust mandate prevents officers from inquiring about the immigration status of crime victims, witnesses, or people seeking help from law enforcement. This is what Nick Lallota wants them to be able to do, is threatening them with. The goal is to ensure immigrant communities feel safe reporting crimes without fear of deportation. So it's not unusual what they are doing. Not at all. And it's just disgusting to see this kind of thing happen.
Yeah, overreach. And I think, like, they don't really deserve to stay in office supporting this stuff. That, like, whole jumble of stuff. It's like, what is the threat? Is it the immigrants? Is it the exploitative material? Is it what's the problem here?
That's a good question.
Is it the citizens? You're mad at the civil servants from localities that, you know, aren't entering into formal agreements in a contradiction of what is normal and understood to be a convention and a historical precedent for those types of arrangements and their expectations in the community as duties to protect and serve that particular community, not the federal jurisdiction and their priorities. I think there's just so much in there, and he just does not realize how much smaller the people he's talking to, how that group is shrinking after every single word.
Well, yeah, he's been pushing the Save USA, whatever the Trump thing.
Oh, that thing's gonna fail.
It's gonna fail big, and it has to fail because basically we've talked about this many times. It's not voter ID. It's not something innocuous. It is basically a way for the federal government to get involved in local elections and to keep track of everybody in a really, really invasive way. Your license is not going to be good enough. You're going to have to get more. And it doesn't end there. But we've talked about that enough. Earlier today, there was an interesting story about the New Jersey governor finding 400 non-citizens that were registered to vote. Actually, no, let's say it this way. 2023, roughly 6,600 non-citizens were registered to vote during the Murphy administration. And 400 people wound up casting ballots because of a software error. Now, all the people affected disclosed they were not citizens when they were seeking out either a driver's license or ID, but were nonetheless placed on the voter rolls in error. In other words, they didn't ask for this. They were basically, it was foisted upon them by a software error and by people who didn't know any better. These people are all going to be removed from the voter rolls. This is the kind of mistake that you will see. But it's not something that happened as a result of an intent to defraud or people trying to vote who don't live here or any of the nightmares that Republicans keep pressing. That's not what's happening. And every program that they are pushing would not have prevented this. Because when you have a software problem, it can register, you know, inanimate objects as eligible to vote. You know, whether or not they show up, that's the question. The state has no evidence that any elections were swayed. Officials with IDEMIA, a technology company based in Virginia, with offices around the world, said the state's division of elections was ultimately responsible for verifying all information transmitted, including residents' eligibility to vote. Ms. Sherrill, the governor, was unstinting in her criticism of the way the Murphy administration handled the problem, citing reckless failure. It's unacceptable that the vendor released software with such a glaring error. It's unacceptable that the MVC took a year to get this issue fixed. And it's unacceptable that no one in the previous administration brought this to light, demanded accountability, or took action when it happened years ago. The important thing is, though, when something like this does happen, you basically bring it to light. You know, you say, this is a problem. This happened. And we have to fix this. The finding that roughly 400 non-citizens had cast ballots is one of the larger confirmed instances of non-citizens voting in Americans' elections. But it remains an exceptionally small percentage of the overall vote a total. If those 400 citizens, non-citizens, had all voted in the state's local elections in 2023, they would constitute just 0.02% of the electorate. If they voted in the 2024 presidential election, those 400 non-citizens would make up about 0.009% of the state's overall vote totals. But you know Trump is going to jump on this. He's going to say this is proof. It's not proof. It's definitely not proof. If anything, it's proof that there are checks and balances and that, you know, it might take them way too long to figure it out, but they will figure it out. And when they do figure it out, they're not going to cover it up, unlike the current administration, which has never seen a cover-up it doesn't like. And you got the nut who fired a pellet gun yesterday outside a New York City federal building. Everyone's saying he was attacking ICE. I'm not sure how attacking a federal building is necessarily attacking ICE, unless he specifically said this is for ICE. But basically, he set off fireworks, lit a fire Monday morning. There's an immigration court in there. There's other government offices. And it was a former U.S. Army soldier who was behind all this. A mechanic on Patriot missile systems who, I guess, finally had enough and cracked. You know, this is kind of what we've been warning about, that people are going to start acting irrationally, and this certainly is an indication of somebody acting irrationally. But we certainly have to look at at the behavior that is inspiring this kind of behavior, you know, where you have armed people in the streets, unidentified, untrained, with horrible backgrounds that have not been vetted at all. People are going to react. I don't know if this person's reacting to that. I have no idea anything about them. And it's certainly not something that I think any of us would condone. But it is something that we can come to expect. And we can come to expect it to be a lot more organized than that if the trends continue. And they are continuing in a very, very disturbing manner, where basically you can shoot to kill and be protected and get away with it and be defended and have the victim lying dead on the sidewalk basically torn apart as a terrorist, as a communist, as a horrible person without knowing anything about them. That is what this administration will do. And so, you know, at some point, people are going to have enough of that. And maybe we're seeing the beginning of that now. I kind of don't think so. I think this is kind of a lone wolf here that really didn't have it very well together. But I hope that the opposition, the anger, takes a more constructive turn. I hope we were able to get a list of every single ICE agent. And the reason I believe we should have that is because clearly ICE is not looking into these people at all. So let's leave it up to the rest of us to look into them, find out if they are qualified to do the job. And if they're qualified to do the job and they're not killing people without reason, then there shouldn't be a problem other than the fact that the immigration policy is completely crazy. But to just have masked people going around, not knowing who they are, and allowing them to kill with impunity, you think that's gonna work? That's gonna keep going? It's not. It definitely is not. Something has to change. Something has to be different. And that pretty much does it. Yeah, that pretty much does it. American Daylight Savings Time, they're talking about that again. As somebody who grew up in the 70s, let me tell you, it's a bad idea because we tried this once before. Kids were getting run over by cars in the morning because it was dark, because the sun came up later. Haven't thought this through. If we're going to get rid of daylight savings time, let's do that and not keep daylight savings time around the year. It makes no sense at all. Yeah, the sun will go down earlier, but it's not going to rise at 9 or 10 in the morning. Last time we did this, it didn't even last a year. I mean, are we really that incapable of learning from our own history? All right, we're going to sign off. Kyle, you want to say goodnight? You're basically wandering around picking up things. No? That's no everything. Everything is no.
I'm a no. I'm trying something new.
All right, well, that's good.
It's called boundaries.
Please keep listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. Support WUSB.fm. There are all kinds of ways you can do that. And we always have some surprise coming up. You never know. You never know what's going to happen next. We'll be back next week. You can write to us, otw@2600.com.
Have a good night, y'all.
We still have 10 seconds to fill.
And if you don't have a good night, try to have a good night another night. But maybe you have a good day in between or a bad day. But then
5 seconds left.
The following night, you can have a good night.
It's not easy. You see that. It's not easy.
Oh, like you even want to hear what I have to say. Okay. You want me to say something? All right. This is it. All right. I'm going to pick up my mic for this. I got to get this. Maybe all the lights turned on you. Now you're in the center of the stage. On what you do, you are in your prime, you've come of age, and you can always have your way somehow, cause everybody loves you now. You can walk away from your mistakes, and you can turn your back on what you knew. Just a little smile is all it takes, yeah, and you can have your cake and eat it too. All loneliness will get to you somehow, but everybody loves you now. Ah, they all want your white body.
All the people want to know your name. As soon there'll be lines outside your door. Feelings do not matter in your game. Yeah, cause nothing's gonna touch you anymore. So your life is only living anyhow. And everybody loves you now. Close your eyes when you don't want to see. And stay at home when you don't want to go. Only speak to those who will agree. Yeah, and close your mind when you don't want to know. Oh, you have lost your innocence somehow. But everybody loves you now. Oh, you know that nothing lasts forever. Ahead, don't look down. Yeah, and lock yourself inside your sacred wall. Oh, this is what you wanted, ain't you proud? 'Cause everybody loves you now.
Hi, this is James from the Polyphonic Spree, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, the station that sends you sunshine.